What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 90. Today, we're going to be talking about workout frequency. So literally how much you should work out throughout the week. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And people think, you know, more is better. You should work out 7 days a week, twice a day to lose weight. And I'm here to say that's not true. And there's a lot of nuance to it of how much you should work out and what type of workouts you should be doing. So we're going to break that down first. But Tom, how's your week been?
It was pretty good. So I wanted to do two quick little updates. So last week when we talked about the hormonal birth control, I forgot to mention one of like the primary sources I use for that. It's a book called Beyond the Pill by Dr. Jolene Brighton. So if you want to know more about the side effects of hormonal birth control and just kind of ways to help you deal with those side effects, and just more information on how the pill affects your body in general, really check out that book. I highly recommend it. It's called Beyond the Pill. All right. Then my second update is last week I talked about how I just got some paddle boards and I was going to take my dogs out. Yeah, my dogs absolutely hated those paddle boards. I'm not surprised. They're not built for water. They got tiny little legs and like a really long body. So they're not built for swimming. One of them, she was okay. She basically just like laid down as close to me or as close to my fiance as possible. And just kind of like laid there and just dealt with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. The other one was constantly pacing up and down on the boards, was crying. So like he'd be on my board, looking at my fiance crying. So I'd go paddle next to her. She'd jump on that one. And as soon as he got on that board, he would just look at me and start crying again. It's like, come on. I just think he just wanted out of the situation and just like didn't know how to really deal with it.
He was hoping one of you guys would get him out. He's like, come on.
Yeah, I was like, he'll get used to it. It was pretty funny. So, like, he was crying for a while, and I was like, I'm just not going to go next to my fiance. I'm tired of having him switch back and forth. I mean, with him moving on the paddleboard and all that, his, like, weight shifting so much, it makes it a little difficult to balance sometimes. So, I'm not trying to keep doing that over and over again.
You're a pro. You know what I mean? It's not like you paddleboard every day, you know?
No, not at all, yeah. I mean, luckily these are pretty good size ones, so balancing isn't the hardest thing. But yeah, with a bunch of moving parts and the water's moving too, yeah, not the easiest thing. He jumped in. Like, I think he was going to swim for my fiance's paddleboard. And as soon as he jumped in, he's like, nope, this is a bad idea. Turned around and like tried to get back on. So I had to like jump in and like pick him up and put him back on.
Yeah, no, your dogs are not water dogs, nope.
No, not at all. So we're probably going to take them out again this weekend. My fiance has been loving those paddle boards. She's gone out, like, I don't know, she's out right now with them. She's probably gone, like, 10 times since we've had them. We'll take the dogs out again sometime soon, just kind of giving them a little bit of rest from all that trauma that we caused them.
Yeah, and then just do it all over again.
Yeah, see if they get better.
Yeah, see if they get used to it, yeah.
I mean, they can't get much worse, so we'll see.
Yeah.
So what's new with you?
You know, not much. Same old stuff, that quarantine life. It seems like things are wrapping up a little bit. Like, things are kind of getting back to normal. Not nearly as fast as I would like them to, but, you know, it is what it is. Still getting my workouts in, still doing my thing like normal. You know, everything's pretty regimented. But this podcast today was really inspired by one of our clients. She's doing great with her diet, losing weight, and you already know this, but I really don't recommend, if you're really heavy set, you know, you haven't done anything for years, your life is just kind of, I don't know, not in order. People think, you know, oh, if you want to lose weight, you have to start working out. And that's not how we think. You know, I really think first you need to get your diet dialed in. And then after a month or two, your body's going to start healing itself. Your body's going to develop the energy to actually want to work out. And then once that happens, you start working out and the cycle just kind of reinforces itself. You feel better, you feel stronger, you want to work out more. And then you kind of get addicted to it. That's kind of the cycle. And it's a great thing to do. But this person, diet was on point, losing weight almost maybe like 3 pounds a week, every week, like clockwork, like very, very steady progress and doing great. But after a while, you know, her body started getting more energy and she wanted to start working out. So I was like, okay, cool. So we got a workout routine set up. And I think it's just, there's so much, I don't know, hype around the gym, but she thought she was going to start working out. And then instead of losing like 3 pounds a week, she was going to lose like 10 pounds a week. And she kind of got discouraged. Like, I'm working out every day and I'm still losing like the same amount. And I was like, you know, you don't get it. Working out is not the best way to lose weight. Like, there's a common saying out there, you can't outrun a bad diet. And it's true. You simply can't. And if you think I'm lying, I mean, I guess you can't do it now because the gyms are closed, but go down to the gym and look how many buff people or even like just jacked lean people are at the gym. I'll ask you that question now. Tom, you know, you go to the gym. What's the percentage? There's like maybe what, two like real buff guys or like two really lean girls in the gym? It's not common.
I mean, yeah, that percentage is maybe 25%.
Oh, shit. I say that's high. But, that's at a good gym, but yeah.
Yeah. What's more startling is when you go to, because I talk about this all the time, how I do those like ultra endurance events.
Yeah.
So you would think like everybody out there that's going to be running 30 miles has got to be lean and then fit, like fit. But not everybody out there is in that good of shape. There's a lot of chunky people. It's definitely not everybody out there has a six pack like you would think. Like, there's a lot of people. It's like, wow, you're running this race? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of surprised.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if working out made you really in shape and made your body really change, the gym, it'd be like 75% people were actually like jacked. It would be.
Yeah, and if you went to any sort of marathon, any sort of running event, everybody out there would be super lean.
Yep.
And that's unfortunately not the case.
Not the case at all. Yeah, like people think, you know, it's the best, just work out 7 days a week, all day, every day, you're going to lose all this weight. But it's really not true. And we don't really like to talk about calories that much because in the grand scheme of things, calories are a very small player in overall health. Actually, shit, they're not a player at all in overall health, but just in losing weight. But working out is not the best way to burn calories. It's just not. Like, you literally burn more calories sitting in a chair for 8 hours than you would, like, lifting weights at the gym for 1 hour. It's called, like, your basal metabolic rate. It's just the amount of calories your body burns literally living, literally surviving. Your heart beating, your kidneys filtering, your lungs breathing. You will burn more calories sitting in a chair than you would at the gym. So trying to go to the gym to burn calories to outrun a bad diet is a race you will never win. I mean, you literally have to kill yourself in the elliptical for like 24 hours a day, and nobody can keep that up. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're David Goggins. It doesn't matter. You can't win that race. So working out is really a great way to build muscle and like increase your overall strength. But if you really want to control your diet, I mean, if you really want to control your body and you really want to change how you look, diet is the way to do that. You can 100% change your body with diet, and then you supplement working out on top of it. And, that's what I wanted to start with. You know what I mean? Because people think working out is like a magic pill, and it's not. If it was, people would be looking way different out there, you know?
Yeah, I kind of partially blame The Biggest Loser, like that TV show, for just kind of reinforcing that and just showing, because you know what? It does work. It does help. But those effects are very temporary. Like, they're not going to help you. Like, you can work out all you want for a factor of like years, and it's not going to help you keep losing weight. In the short term, it definitely helps. But, I mean, those are short-term effects. Those aren't going to be consistent enough. So I definitely blame The Biggest Loser for kind of reinforcing that bad information out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to bash working out because I know that's what it sounds like I'm doing. I love working out. I think everybody should work out. I think it's natural for the human body to move. There's nothing natural about sitting in a cubicle for 8 hours, sitting in your car for 2 hours to and from work. That's not good. That's a recipe for depression. That's a recipe for obesity. It's everything. You don't want that. But working out is not some magic pill. You know, it's part of the formula. It's a big part, sure, but it's not as big as diet. Like, not even close. And, like, more isn't necessarily better. Like, people think, you know, I need to work out 7 days a week, twice a day. That's not true. There are situations where training frequency can be increased, and we'll talk about that later in certain routines that we approve of. But if you're just some random guy out there training 7 days a week, twice a day, good luck trying to make progress. You know what I mean? It's going to be damn near impossible. And I kind of want to break down really what working out does to our body that induces the change. Because I don't know if people really know all the little details. Like, I don't want to break that down. So working out, specifically lifting weights, breaks down the muscle and stimulates muscle protein synthesis. And that's a trigger needed to recover and get bigger and stronger. That's what tells our body, like, hey, we just went through this traumatic event. Even if it was like bicep curls, you know, our biceps were not strong enough to get through this. We need to make them bigger. We need to make them stronger. So next time this event occurs, we better handle it. That's what it is. So you work out, you stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and then your body recovers and gets stronger. And one weightlifting session can stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and this is in a non-trained person, for upwards of 48 hours. So 2 whole days, your body is getting the signal, hey, repair this, hey, make this stronger. So the protein you eat will get directed to those location sites, like I said, a bicep curl, to go to your biceps, hey, make this bigger, make this stronger. And the only thing is, for highly trained people, someone like me, someone like Tom, that 48-hour window slowly gets condensed. It's really down to about 24 hours. And that's just because it's just adaptation. You know, it just is what it is. And this explains newbie gains a little bit. If you're in the gym world, you know what that's like. If you go to the gym, you're 18, you never lifted weights before, that first year, you are literally going to explode. Or at least the potential for you to grow is at its very peak. And this is partly one of the reasons why, is that those one weightlifting sessions count for almost double as someone like me. I train, I stimulate muscle protein synthesis for about 24 hours, that's it. This newbie trains, this 18-year-old, he'll stimulate muscle protein synthesis for 48 hours. So it's just kind of an advantage you get from those newbie gains. And, you know, some people don't know that. And honestly, I don't think neither of us appreciated those newbie gains. Like, they kind of just happen, and you think it's always going to be that way, and then shit stalls, you know?
Yeah, you get so excited, and you just, like, you start planning for the future. And it's like, oh, hey, my bench press went up 10 pounds this month. Well, in that case, in 12 months, I should be 120 pounds up. Yep. And that's just not how it works.
It's not how it works. Unfortunately, yeah, things plateau, and then you have to start training smarter. You have to start training harder. And then, honestly, every year after that, it just becomes harder and harder to put on muscle. It is what it is. But, like, developing a workout routine that can constantly keep muscle protein synthesis elevated is an ideal way to put on muscle. That's really how you want to think about it, because that's a trigger, obviously, to grow. So you want to keep that trigger pressed all the time, or at least as frequently as possible. And there's a lot of different ideologies, I guess, on volume. And volume revolves around just the amount of sets you do while you train. And it's been shown, and there's a million studies out there, but at least the ones I've read, that roughly 8 sets per muscle group is ideal to damage the muscle enough to stimulate muscle protein synthesis to its maximum amount and induce growth. So I don't know really, do you know a good way to explain like sets and reps to the layman out there? Because I'm kind of speaking in generalities, thinking everybody knows, but how would you explain to us people just didn't know what sets were and things like that?
So typically, like for bench press, you would do 3 sets of 10 reps. So for reps, like you sit down, you do the bench press, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, up to 10, those 10 reps, and then you rest for 30 seconds, so a minute and a half, and then you do another one. So each one of those 10 reps counts as 1 set.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a good way to do it. So what you want to do to stimulate the most growth possible is at least create a routine that does 8 sets per body part. So it's 8 sets for chest, 8 sets for biceps, 8 sets for legs, things like that. That's gonna give you the best chance to actually grow. It's called hypertrophy, like muscle hypertrophy, muscle growth. That's gonna be the best chance to do it. There are different ways to go about this, you know. I don't know, I guess there's a million ways to train. If you think about all the years we've been training, I've been training maybe Shit, 18 years? When did we start? We were like 13? Would you say we started when we were 13?
Freshman year of high school, 13, 14, somewhere around there.
We didn't train 8th grade going into 9th grade that summer. Didn't we do that?
I know we pretty much worked out every summer. I'm just trying to think of when we continued that summer.
It really started. Yeah, yeah.
The school year.
Oh, but yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, so probably 14. Yeah. Okay, so that's 17 years, so a long time. And so we've done a million different routines, and so there are different ways to do stuff. And one of the ones you have is a whole body routine, and that's kind of that routine is pretty self-explanatory. So in your one workout, you're going to try and hit every body part. And you do that by doing kind of like multi-joint movements, like big movements, something like one, you're going to do squats, you'll do deadlifts, you'll do bench press, you'll do military press, which hit shoulders, and then maybe like buys and tries. So you do five exercises that hit your entire body. And overall, go ahead.
Honestly, like with a whole body routine, I think unless you plan on being in the gym for 2 to 3 hours, like you're probably just going to skip on those isolation exercises. Like you're going to be hitting your biceps if you're doing pull-ups or any back exercise. Like if you're doing bench press and military press, you're hitting triceps. So I don't know if you're really going to... Personally, I don't spend any extra time on my buys and tries, and I don't do stuff like leg extensions to isolate my quads. If I'm going to do a whole body routine, you're just going to be there for too long. So I just, for the whole body thing, I just focus on those multi-joint exercises, so you're hitting multiple muscles at once.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and then the whole body routines that we created, there are no isolation movements. Yeah, that's a great point. And because like you said, there's only so many hours in the day, and honestly, being at the gym for, if you're at the gym for 3 hours, you're not doing it right. Like, I don't care how good a shape you're in. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And if you're trying to hit that magic number of 8, like that means that's pretty much 2 exercises per body part. If you start trying to break those exercises down into like hitting only one muscle at a time instead of like 3 or 4 at a time, man, you're going to be in there all day.
All day. Yeah. So the whole body routines are great for overall health. And like total body strength, like you're just going to be building up your entire body. And I think they have a role for a lot of people who maybe aren't gym rats. Maybe you're training at home. Maybe you're just starting training. I think it's a great way to actually get your whole body moving and just be healthy. And I think a lot of these workouts, they can be fun. And like, this is pretty much how you train, right? Because you don't do a lot of isolation movements ever.
Not really. Honestly, I've been, I switch up my routine so often, but the last time I was doing a whole body workout routine, I would do pull-ups, push-ups, military press, and then I would do squats, and then I would do all those one right after the other, because you're hitting different body parts, so you're able to do that.
That's a lot.
And then I would rest for about 5 minutes on the bike. Just go ahead and slow the pace, help me recover, and then the whole thing over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do that, like I would do about 10 sets of those.
Yeah, so that brings us to the cons of the whole body routine. Even though he just said that like very nonchalantly, that little set right there, that monster set, is not easy. Like, was that easy?
Yeah, my heart rate is through the roof when I'm done with that.
Yeah, that's that sounds terrible to someone from my perspective who knows what that takes. Like, that sounds not fun at all. But that's one of the cons of it. They actually, these whole body routines, if you do it right, can be very hard. They can be very tiring. And which, again, saying that's a con is kind of weird because, you know, you're supposed to go to the gym to be, you know, tired. You're supposed to go to the gym to push yourself. So I get that. And also the biggest con, I think, for this is if your goal is hypertrophy, which my goal always is, you're not going to be able to hit that magic 8 sets with a whole body routine because the volume would be too high. You'd literally be in the gym for 3 hours and you just couldn't do it. And even if you could do it, good luck trying to recover afterwards. You know, unless you're a professional athlete, it just wouldn't happen.
So, yeah, the low overall volume, it can be made up if you decide to be in there for a very long period of time. Turn a 1 hour workout into like a 3 hour workout. So it's kind of give or take. But if you're in the gym for 3 hours, that means you're not recovering for those 3 hours. So you're going to have to dedicate more time to recovery. I don't think this is the best method unless you're going to do it the way I was doing it. That way you can kind of make up for that volume and that time. But it's really hard. And those workouts were still taking me over an hour. And those were some of my longest workouts.
Yeah, no, it was very hard. So those are the cons. Like, if your goal is truly hypertrophy, I don't think a whole body routine is best. But if your goal isn't hypertrophy, the whole body routine can be great just for overall health, overall strength. And you will put on muscle, no doubt about it. So I think it has a place, but you just need to be honest about what your goal is. If your goal is to feel good, be happy, feel strong, then a whole body routine can be perfectly fine. If you want to put on the most amount of muscle possible, I just don't think that's ideal. And the same goes for this other technique. It's called a bro split. I think if anybody, any guy out there, you know, 14 years old, whatever, maybe 18 years old, just starting to train, this is most likely the routine they're going to do. And it revolves around breaking up one muscle group per day. And so chest is, Monday is National Chest Day. Everybody knows that who goes to the gym. So you go to the gym, and so Monday, all you train is chest. You normally train around high volume, so about 20 sets. And then Tuesday would be back. Thursday would be shoulders. Wednesday would be shoulders. Thursday would be legs. Friday would be arms. You know, that's an example split. Those days can switch. And that there are pros to this, you know, like it gives your week, your day clear structure and like a plan to follow. And I think a lot of people need that when they first go to the gym, because a lot of people just simply don't know what to do. And it also allows for experimentation with various exercises to see what works for you. And I know me and you we've had the same problem where one exercise, because we used to train together. I don't know if people know that. We were training partners initially for years, but certain exercises feel great to me, but they feel terrible to you. And I remember, I don't think you ever really liked dumbbell pullovers, right? Didn't it hurt your shoulder, if I'm remembering correctly? I don't know.
For whatever reason, a lot of just overhead stuff in general hurts like my left elbow. I don't know what it is. Like I can do skull crushers, tricep extensions fine, but if I do over my head tricep extension, it just like hurts my left elbow. And same thing with pullovers. For whatever reason, like, it just hurts my elbow. So it's just like, why injure myself at a part where I'm not trying to injure myself when I can get the same benefits of a different lift?
Exactly. Yeah, so the bro split allows, because you're going to be doing 4 to 5 exercises per body part, and when you're just starting out, you don't know what feels good to you. Like, all of our bodies are similar, of course, you know what I mean, 2 arms, 2 legs, all that stuff, but my biceps may be longer than Tom's. My literal bones might be longer, the way they insert may be at a different angle. So certain exercises feel great for me, like pullovers, dumbbell pullovers, which exercise for your lats, exercise for your back, feel great to me. I can do those literally in my sleep. I feel them solely in my lats, and I feel great, but Tom does them and he hates them and they don't feel good. So he shouldn't do them. You know, you have to listen to your body. So doing a bro split allows you to find the exercise that work for you, which I think is important. You know, don't just follow a cookie cutter routine. If you don't feel the exercise or if it hurts, don't do that exercise. It's not for you. It's not for your body type. And the bro split also allows for high volume, which is great. A lot of volume will induce change, will induce growth, because you can do upwards of about 20 sets per muscle group. Which honestly, I haven't done this split in a very long time, which is a crazy amount of volume. But the con to the bro split is it doesn't allow you to maximally stimulate muscle protein synthesis. And remember, that's really the goal we want for working out, if hypertrophy is the goal, which is just muscle accrual, which is obviously, that should be the goal for everybody in my opinion, but that's just me. But working out, say chest on Monday, if you are a trained athlete, which you will be after a year or two in the gym, your chest is going to be under that muscle protein stimulus, like muscle protein synthesis stimulus, for about that 24 hours. So when Wednesday rolls around, your chest is no longer accruing those amino acids to grow at a high rate. It still is, but not at an increased rate. Your back would be, because you train back on Tuesday. So ideally, you would train your chest again, but a bro split you're not, because the volume is so high. It takes so long to recover, you're going to be sore as shit, and you can't simply just train a sore muscle. You should never train a sore muscle. If your muscle is sore, let it rest, let it recover. There's no point in breaking down something that's already broken. It makes no sense. So that's a problem with a bro split. You're never really stimulating muscle protein synthesis to the maximum amount to accrue the most muscle. And something I want to talk about with the bro split, which is the angle I don't think a lot of people touch on, is this is really the typical pro bodybuilder routine. if you were to pull up a Muscle and Fitness magazine or Muscular Development and look at Jay Cutler's routine, he would pretty much do a bro split twice a week, which is crazy volume. He would chain chest twice a week, 20 sets, and that's simply not feasible for a lot of people. And honestly, it's not feasible for 99.9% of people. And it kind of upsets me that, because I fell victim to this, being 15, 16, looking at these magazines, looking at these routines, and be like, okay, if I do the same routine that Jay Cutler does, if you don't know who Jay Cutler is, he's a Mr. Olympia, huge, jacked, white guy. And you think, you know, you follow his routine, you're going to get the same results. But what these people don't tell you is that these pro bodybuilders, and this goes for pro athletes as well, genetically, sorry to tell you, they're not like us. They're freaks. You know, their bodies simply want to accrue muscle. Their bodies simply want to recover faster, get bigger and stronger faster than all of us. Also, 99% of the time, they're on a ton of drugs that increase recovery. And that's really the key. You can break your body down a tremendous amount in the gym, like doing 20 sets per muscle group, which is a crazy amount of volume, which is going to break down your muscles to a huge extent, if you're recovering. That's the trick. If you recover, which needs a lot of sleep, a lot of food, and a lot of drugs, then yes, you can do the bro split twice a week, and that would be ideal for muscle protein, for muscle hypertrophy. That would be perfect. But I could ask you, Tom, how many genetic freaks do you know, and how many people really have everything in their life dialed in?
I mean, I don't know anybody like that.
Me
either. I mean, I'm trying to be like that, but not even close.
Yeah. So that's a problem, right?
Yeah, definitely. So I want to just touch on a couple things. So you mentioned like 20 sets. I think 20 sets is like weight is a little bit too high, but we talked about 8 sets should be the minimum for a body part. 20 is definitely the maximum. I shoot for 12 to 15 generally per body part. Is that what you do too?
Yeah, I'm using today. When I worked out today, it was 12 sets total. Yeah.
Yeah. So somewhere around there. I mean, it's better time wise and stuff like that. So some of the other cons of a bro split, I think this is the biggest one. If you're working out on a gym, like Tyson is not joking around when he says Monday is National Chest Day. Like, good luck finding an open bench press.
Yeah, for sure.
And for me, like I normally do legs on Mondays just because it's like impossible to do chest on Monday for that very reason. So another con might be you just don't have access to the equipment that you want to do, or you're sitting around waiting for one of the bench presses to open up on Monday. So like that's a major con. Another one I see with this method is that you can only, like, once you damage the muscle like so far, like you can just keep working out, but like you're it's like the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah, what are you
like,
getting?
You're still working out, you're still spending time, you're still spending energy, but the amount of return on that isn't going to be as high. So I don't think this is the best method for that, for you to, normally like after I do bench press, I'll do bench press and maybe like one other exercise. After that, my chest is shot. Mm-hmm. Like I can barely feel anything. I'm just kind of working, just going through the motions just because I feel like I need to spend more time in there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point to talk about that. At a certain point, like, you know, I do about 2 exercises for chest. Maybe I'll do bench press and like dips, maybe push-ups if I feel like it. But after those 2 or 3 exercises, I'm not feeling anything in my chest. Like, you're just going through the motions. And at that point, what's the point? You know what I mean? Like, it's just you're breaking down something that's already broken.
Yeah, like I don't think you're. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're increasing that signal for muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah,
but it's probably not that much.
Yeah, like, is it worth it? Is it worth the extra hour in the gym? Yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely don't think it's worth it. I like that 8 to 10 method. I mean, we're going to talk about the way that both of us really recommend. And another thing with the bro split is, I normally get bored doing these. I don't know, because like there's only so many exercises you can do. I mean, it's great to provide, like, structure, but, man, just kind of going in there doing chest, flies, dips, I don't even really know what else you can do that day. Like, I mean, maybe you're throwing some push-ups, something like that. Just kind of doing the same body part over and the same movements over and over again. I get bored pretty fast with that, as opposed to doing other things.
Yeah, that's a good angle, too, I never thought about. Yeah, I haven't done the bro split since, honestly, since we were teenagers, but I remember just going through and doing all the machines that were for that muscle So like you do all the shoulder machines, you do all the chest machines, you know what I mean? That's just kind of how you did it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was a great way to learn.
Yeah, good way to learn, but I mean, we talked about this briefly like an hour ago, but it's just so dumb if you think about how we started working out. And that's kind of why, another reason I wanted to do this so people will know, like we were 14, 15, and we just thought you go to the gym, you work your ass off. We would be in the gym for 3 hours easily. And we thought that was ideal, right? Because you're in this like culture, this mindset, no pain, no gain, just keep working. And ideally, we would have cut our workouts by like, I don't know, 70%. And like actually put on size when we were younger instead of just beating our body down and never really recovering. Because there's no way we were sleeping. There's no way we were eating enough. Like, not even close.
Yeah. You live and you learn. Definitely not the best method. And one other thing that that you mentioned earlier is about how like these pro athletes recover faster for genetic reasons, drug reasons. But they also have access to a lot of things and live a very different lifestyle than we do. So a lot of pro athletes will finish a really tough workout by doing hot-cold contrasts. The only way I can do a hot-cold contrast is in the shower by switching the dial back and forth.
Yeah.
Whereas a professional athlete's got a hot tub right next to an ice tub. So they're going back and forth between this, getting way better results. They're also not finishing their two-hour workout by driving to work, sitting in the office, dealing with all the stress from the work that they're going to have, you know, for 40 hours a week. You know, they don't have to deal with all that, those outside stresses. Working out to them is like pretty much their only stress. They also have the ability to finish a really tough workout, go do another hour and a half of recovery, finish that with a great meal, and then go take a nap. And then maybe do the same thing later on in the day. So that you're able to do something like that twice a day. So the lifestyle that we live is so much different than a Jay Cutler or like a LeBron James. Like there's just so many differences. So we can't really take their workouts and apply it to our lives just because we don't live the same life.
Yeah. Now I don't think people talk about that enough. Like, cause those are the people, like at least I remember when I first started, I have a bunch of Arnold Schwarzenegger books and I would read his routines, and we listen to these people who are literally the 1% of the 1%. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, is on drugs. He admits it. And everybody's on drugs, to be honest. These people, they look at weights and they grow. Someone like LeBron James, like, looks at a track and he gets faster. You know, they're just freaks. And these are the people that we base our routines around. And I'm like, man, that's not smart. Like, we need to base our routines around, like, the, I don't know, lowest common denominator, like the average guy. And in that sense, everybody would grow more, you know?
Yeah, like try to compare yourself to somebody that you're similar to instead of like the elite. Like it's definitely good to try to strive to be like, you know, this reach the same athleticism of a LeBron James, try to get as big and strong as Arnold. But I mean, hey, good luck with that. Like there's so many other factors in play other than just working out.
Yeah, you have to be honest with yourself. You do. And if you have that potential, you know, and you have, again, look in the mirror. You walk around with a six pack since you were 12 years old. Could you bench press 300 pounds and you were 15? Like if you're a freak, man, do your thing. Hop on some drugs, do a bro split and see what happens, you know, but be honest with yourself because most people aren't. That's just how it is. And yeah, so that gets to my, I think, ideal way to train. It's what I've settled on. Being an average guy with average genetic potential, just trying to maximize the amount of time in the gym and trying to maximize the amount of muscle I can put on naturally. And it's really a push-pull routine or two body parts a day routine. And that really allows for adequate volume. You can be in the gym for an hour to maybe 90 minutes and get those 8 sets per body part. And you can do that muscle group twice a week. So instead of like the call of the bro split is you only stimulate muscle protein synthesis once a week, in this routine, you stimulate it twice a week. So you're getting twice the growth potential. And I think that's ideal. So for me, let's say my routines are a little weird right now. But normally I would do like a chest and shoulders. So I would do one exercise bench press for 4 sets. And then I would do maybe 4 sets of dips for chest, and that's it. So my chest gets 8 sets total done. And then I would transition into shoulders and do maybe 4 sets of a standing barbell military press and 4 sets of a side laterals for my delts. And then my shoulders are done for the day. And that routine takes about an hour. If you want to do some abs, if you want to do some cardio, you can, you know. And that's it. And then I do that routine again, or a variation of that routine of chest and shoulders, a couple days later. So that'd be like maybe a Wednesday, or excuse me, a Monday and a Thursday. And that allows me to train that muscle group twice a week with adequate stimulus to grow. And that's really, I think, the ideal way to be in the gym for the least amount of time and get the maximum results. Don't you think?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And another way you can even kind of like increase decrease the amount of time that you're in the gym is you are doing two like very different body parts. I mean, with chest and shoulders, it's a little bit more difficult because you're using a lot of the same muscles and a lot of those exercises. But if you're doing something like chest and legs or back and legs, something like that,
yeah,
you can do those exercises back to back. Like you can do a set of squats. Since you're done with the squats, go over there and do a set of pull-ups and then do your rest. You can do something like that because, yeah, while you're like breathing hard, your back is perfectly fine after those squats. So you're able to do those exercises back to back. So you can get a really solid workout in like 30, 40 minutes.
In half the time.
You know, it's not very time consuming.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a great point. If you're doing opposite, like a chest and a back routine, yeah, for sure. And you can always mess around with the type of muscles you pair together. And that's something I do too. You know, you kind of switch around what muscle groups you like to train on the same day. And that's a great way to increase intensity as well. And Tom does this. I don't think he knows this. That just what he said right there, to do squats and pull-ups, F all of that. That is so hard. But if you want to do it, you can, you know?
Well,
people don't know. They think that's easy. That's not easy.
Oh, no. Like, those are two of the hardest lifts possible. I know it's really weird, but I do back and legs together. That's part of my routine right now.
That sounds like torture.
Yeah, it is really hard, but I give longer rest periods on those days, and since they are completely different body parts, it's not as bad as it sounds.
Yeah.
It just really shortens the workout, and one of my goals from like when I lift weights is I want to get my heart rate to as high as I possibly can. It's not really HIIT training, but kind of like in a similar aspect of that.
Yeah.
It's trying to get that like really good cardio going on while I'm training. Like I'm always trying to train for like my VO2 max, and that's a good way of doing that.
Yeah, you want to definitely keep those lungs in shape, and doing those supersets, which is like an exercise back to back, is a great way to tax your lungs, no doubt about it. If you don't want to do cardio, just do that and your lungs will get in better shape 100%. And
another good benefit of that, the push-pull type of thing where you're doing stuff twice a week.
Yeah.
Just kind of like reemphasize something that you said earlier. Instead of getting that signal to grow once a week, you're doing it twice a week. So like if you do chest on Monday, by Thursday, Friday, you're not getting that signal to grow anymore. But if by doing that twice a week thing, now you're giving your chest that signal to grow on Monday, and then you're giving it another signal to grow again on Thursday. So you're constantly giving that body part that signal, grow, 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 grow. And exactly. That's true pretty much for every part of your body.
Yep. Yeah, that's the ideal. That's what you want to do. And if, again, this is for the goal of hypertrophy. This is a goal for muscle growth, which should be the goal of everybody. Again, that's just my opinion. Because, honestly, having extra muscle on your frame is literally never a bad thing. Like, when you're in the bed, you're old, you're 80 years old, your body, it literally eats this muscle. The more muscle you have on your body, the longer you're going to keep your strength, the longer you're going to be able to live, like, a functional life. Everybody wants to be old, right? Everybody want not be old, but get old, and you'll be 80, 90 years old, but they want to be functional. What's the point of being 90? You have sarcopenia, you literally have no muscle left. You can't open a jar. You can't tie your shoes. You can't put on your clothes because you're so weak. Like, you don't want that. You need to accrue as much muscle as possible. So in these older years, when you're not able to lift weights, when you're not able to be that physically active, you have like a pool to pull from. You know what I'm saying? You have like reserves. That's what you want. You want more muscle as you can. And you're not going to look like a pro bodybuilder unless you want to look like a pro bodybuilder. I don't know how many people tell me, oh, I don't want to lift weights because I don't want to be big. Oh, I don't want to lift weights because I don't want to be muscular. I'm like, bro, or even chick, whatever girl, guy's talking to me. I'm like, trust me, you will not be a professional bodybuilder unless you want to be. Like, you don't just wake up one day jacked. That's like disrespectful to all the people who try every day to be jacked, you know?
And that's a bit of an understatement. You won't be a bodybuilder unless you want to be. It's like, not only do you have to want to be it, like, you have to be obsessed with it, and you have to, like, consistently live that lifestyle with maybe the, like, added benefit of either the pharmacy or just be blessed with great genetics.
Yeah.
Like, you got to put in the work to do it. Like, you're not just going to turn into a bodybuilder overnight from lifting weights a couple times a week.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot harder.
That's but you know we've heard that a million times. You know we've heard yeah. that. How many times have you heard that?
Oh, every time. Yeah. I mean, especially with women. I don't know why. I don't really get that from men too often, but yeah, from women all the time. Not trying to be sexist. That's just kind of
that's just
my
true.
Own experience.
Yeah, it's my experience too. Yeah, so don't worry about that. You want to prioritize hypertrophy. Don't be afraid that you're going to wake up one day and be 300 pounds jacked, because you will not. And yeah, that's routine I recommend people do. Two body parts a day, either push-pull routine, twice a week, I think is ideal. And to touch on how many days a week you should train total, personally, I train 6 days a week, and I always have 1 day off, no weights. And I don't do completely nothing that day. I mean, sometimes I will if I'm tired or busy, whatever, but I use that 1 day off as kind of like an active recovery day. So you either maybe do some yoga. I know Tom's into yoga a lot. Do some stretching. For me, I normally just start my day with a light cardio session, maybe 20, 30 minutes. Not going hard, breaking a light sweat, getting my blood flowing. That's what I do on my days off. So it's kind of like active recovery. But I never train 7 days a week. And that's coming from a guy whose diet is on point. I do eat enough calories to recover. I do get enough sleep to recover. But I still don't think, even in my state, I have enough, I don't know, recovery time to train 7 days a week. Like, I don't think I could. I don't know how many people really should besides the genetic freaks and pro athletes who kind of live that lifestyle.
Well, even those pro athletes, they have an off season. So maybe that they are training 7 times a week. They at least have those couple months off so that they are able to focus on recovery. And they... unlike you, like, who finishes your workout and then goes and works, they have all this time to play with all these different recovery methods in between. So they're able to recover a little bit faster like that. Yeah, I love that you mentioned that you have a recovery day and not a rest day. Because a rest day just implies you just sit on your ass. Like, no, you're still doing things to get your blood flowing, still getting your body moving. Like, yeah, active recovery is the way to do it. Some other methods is like foam rolling is another big thing that I use a lot other than just like yoga. I always, like, one thing I really do like about having I have a Garmin watch, like a wearable device, is that, like, there's that 10,000 step count thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm always trying to get that, always trying to hit that as like a minimum. I normally kill it. It's like, I'll do like a 5 to 20 mile run a day, and that easily gets my like steps in right there. But even on the days where I don't get any kind of running and I'm still walking my dogs, maybe I'll hit my stationary bike, I'm trying to get into that 10,000 steps to, like, make sure I'm still moving. Like, but blood flow is so important. And I know today we just talked about pretty much just lifting weights for muscle growth. But one of the other added benefits of it is all that stress that you're putting on your body isn't just giving your body signals to grow muscle. It's also telling your bones, hey, you need to get stronger too. So it's a great way to increase bone density. So if you ever do plan on being old one day, which I think most of us do, you don't want to break a hip, fall over, and just be stuck on the floor, and hopefully somebody's around and saw you to pick you up, right? Because that seems like a horrible way to go out. I mean, unfortunately, that thing happens all the time.
Yeah.
But if you want to, like, kind of stay healthy enough so that doesn't happen to you, lifting weights is pretty much like the only way, the only form of exercise that will increase that bone density. Like, swimming is a great workout, but it's not putting all that added stress on your joints, so they're not getting, or your bones. So swimming is not really going to increase your bone density like lifting weights will.
Yeah, that's something I don't think about because I'm a young male. You know what I'm saying? I get that. But that's something you should think about when you're 65 plus. Because I see a lot of people coming to the hospital with broken hips. Oh my goodness. It seems like the most painful injury out there. And I feel bad for every single one of them. And that is something you don't appreciate, having strong bones, until the day you need them, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, you can't really measure how strong your bones are. And you can't see that your bones are getting stronger but you'll know if they're weak.
Oh, you'll know real quick if they're weak. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I mean, that's just kind of one of those things, like, you'll never really see it. I mean, unless you're getting x-rays done all the time and you're, like, measuring, like, scans. Your bone density.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that does something like that. But, yeah, that's just, like, such a key component of, like, resistance training when it comes to health is, like, definitely muscle strength is very important, but that bone density is important for everybody. And I know women suffer from broken hips at a much more, at an increased rate than men do. And a lot of that has to do with men feeling a lot more comfortable doing this resistance training than women do. So women, definitely lift weights. Don't be afraid of the gym. Don't be afraid of doing squats, pull-ups, push-ups, all those heavy lifts. Like, they're important for everybody.
They are. Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah, 100%. So we did pull a few studies that kind of back up the amount of volume and kind of back up the amount of training and how you should train to increase hypertrophy, to increase muscle growth. So you want to go over those real quick?
Yeah, let's just go over the meta-analysis. So okay. A meta-analysis was, instead of doing your own study, you look at a bunch of other studies and just compare them. So this is a meta-analysis of 25 randomized control trials. So a randomized control trial is the gold standard of any sort of testing. That's where you're playing for all the variables. A lot of testing is done through, like, questionnaires where there's a lot of variables at play. With a randomized control trial, there's only one variable at play. So these are the gold standards. So this was looking at resistance training for hypertrophy. That's what we've been talking about all day, lifting weights to get stronger and bigger muscles. So the things that it looked at was time under tension. That's the time that your muscles contracted. So if you're doing a bench press, the time under tension is you're lowering the weight to your chest, and then when you go up, like, your chest is contracted that entire time. So that's time under tension. The rest period in between sets, the intensity. So intensity basically means, like, when it comes to lifting weights, are you lifting 80% of what you can do? Are you lifting 20% of what you can do? That type of thing is intensity. Volume is how much you're doing that day, and frequency is how often are you doing it. So the meta-analysis came to the conclusion that 7 to 9 reps of 70 to 79% of your one rep max with 6 seconds of time under tension with 60-second rest periods in between performed twice a week was ideal. That was the best information. So just kind of break that down. 7 to 9 reps. So that means if you were doing pull-ups, for example, you would do 7 pull-ups to 9 pull-ups. Then you would rest for 60 seconds and then do that again. And then each one of those reps would take about 6 seconds. So if you're doing a pull-up, it should be like 1 to 2 seconds on the way up. Then you're lowering yourself for about 4 to 5 seconds. And then you're going to do, like, pull-ups, you're going to do that twice a week.
Yeah, so looking at these results, this is pretty much exactly what I would think would be ideal. It makes perfect sense. And I didn't touch on it earlier with how I like to train twice a week, all that type of stuff with a push-pull. But when I train, I actually have a stopwatch on my phone. Everyone, I think everybody knows. Either you have a watch or you have a smartphone that has a stopwatch. So I like to keep my rest periods between 60 and 90 seconds. So I literally... like, I don't leave it a chance. I have a stopwatch on the entire time I train because it keeps you honest, because when you're exhausted between sets, especially if you do something like Tom said where you do, like, squats and pull-ups, you're going to be huffing and puffing. Your brain is literally going to slow down time. And it's going to be like, no, it's only been 10 seconds. And you look at the clock and it's really been a minute. So to keep myself honest, I always keep a stopwatch. And for my, like, lighter exercises, if I'm doing biceps or calves or something where it's not really that exerting, I do 60-second rest period. If I'm doing something heavy, like a bench, a squat, a deadlift, 60 seconds is a little short for me. Like, I just honestly have a hard time recovering in 60 seconds, so I do 90 seconds. But that's still, I think, adequate. You know, that's still fast enough. You don't want to wait, like, 5 minutes between sets. You don't want to be at the gym and having a full conversation with somebody between every set. It's just not ideal. You know, be aware, get your music on, get in the zone, and be aware of how much time you are spending in between sets. So 60 seconds is great. I think 60 and 90 seconds, in my opinion. And the rep range of 7 to 9, I think, is great as well, because someone like me, I'm injury prone. If you listen to this podcast in the past, you know there's been multiple times I'm injured. Like, I think I'm injured like 3 or 4 times a year, like clockwork. It just is. My shoulder, my back, my leg, something will go out. But the heavier the weight is, the more likely you are to get hurt. So if I train at those rep ranges of maybe, say, 3 to 6, something always tweaks. Because it's just so much weight on your body, so much weight on your joints, on your muscles, on everything. But 7 to 9 is still pretty heavy. That's not an easy lift. So training heavy enough to stimulate muscles without training so heavy that you're promoting injury is ideal. And twice a week, I think that's really the answer there. You want to stimulate your muscles twice a week. That's ideal. If you can do that, you should.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect to come across that meta-analysis and basically come to the same conclusion that we have on our own.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to have that reinforcement.
For sure.
I 7 to 9 reps, I think, is perfect as well. So if you're doing like 1 to 3 reps, like, you're going to increase your risk of injury, like Tyson said, because your body mechanics are going to start getting all out of whack. You're not going to have proper form because you're going to be trying to forcing up those extra reps. And so you're increasing your risk of injury. And another downside is you're not going to stimulate muscle protein synthesis as much as you might think, because you're not actually damaging the muscle as much.
Yep.
So we have a bunch of different motor units. That's the way like our bodies contract, our muscles contract. So the thing with like motor units is the weakest one is always going to be activated if you're activating that muscle. But the strongest one is only going to be activated if it needs to be. And so if you're lifting 5 pounds, maybe you're only recruiting 2 motor units. But if you're lifting 100 pounds, then you're going to be recruiting all of them. And the weakest motor units have the most endurance. The highest, or like the last motor units recruited, have the least amount of endurance because they're not used as often. So if you're lifting, like, you know, doing 3 reps, all your motor units are not going to be burnt out. Just like your strongest motor units, those are going to be burnt out, but the rest of them can still keep going. But you're lifting a weight that you're not able to keep training. So you're not fatiguing all your motor units. You're only fatiguing like your strongest ones when the rest of them can keep going. So that's why like you need to do like 7 reps or more, so that way you're able to fatigue more and more motor units. That's the goal. You want to train and damage all those motor units, so all of them are getting that signal to grow and not just your strongest ones.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So like you said, that's the goal. That's the goal if your goal is hypertrophy, which is increasing the amount of muscle on your body. If you want to be a power lifter, you know, you literally want to just increase the amount of weight you can lift, your 1 rep max. You know, if you want to bench press, I don't know, 600 pounds, then yeah, go ahead and train that rep range, real low rep ranges. That's how you're going to increase strength. But don't expect to look like a bodybuilder. Don't expect to actually increase the amount of muscle you carry on your body to the most like maximum potential, because you won't for those reasons. You'll get stronger, and you know, strength is never a weakness. Being strong is a good thing, but you will not increase your muscle size as much as you would be if your volume was more, if your reps were more. So it's different, you know?
Yeah, and even if you are trying to like increase that, you're still going to be doing... you're going to be combining both. Maybe one exercise you're doing that, or maybe one day you're spending like going extremely heavy, but then the next week you're going to be doing different types of training. So you're still going to be combining both.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like if those,
it's not mutually exclusive.
Only does one rep of everything.
Exactly.
Like, no, he does multiple.
Yeah, exactly. So there's another study you want to touch on, right?
Yeah. So just talking about what you just mentioned, how if you're trying to get strong or you just do 1 rep, well, this is a study. Granted, this one's looking at untrained athletes. So I'm taking this one with a grain of salt, because untrained athletes are very different than trained athletes, just on how they respond to exercise.
And honestly, but, like, and you're only untrained for a short period of time. You're going to get trained pretty fast. You go in the gym for 6 months, these results are going to be different, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So this one showed that it's actually the total volume that matters more than the actual intensity of your workouts. So you don't need to do sets to like complete failure in order to achieve hypertrophy. So basically what that means is if you're doing 4 sets of 10 repetitions, that's the same thing as doing 5 sets of 8 repetitions. So you're still getting 40 overall. But the difference between those 5 sets of 8 versus the 4 of 10 is you're not going all the way to failure each time. So you can achieve like the same amount of hypertrophy doing that. Granted, this is with untrained athletes. Personally, I feel like you should always train like either to failure or at least approach that line. Mm-hmm. So I would rather do four sets of 10 than 5 versus 8. That's just personal. And then also, that 4 sets is a lot less time than 5. That, you know, that stuff adds up. So that can turn a 30-minute workout into a 40-minute workout. But that just kind of goes to show you it's volume matters a lot more than just intensity.
Yeah. No, I like this study, and I think this is an enlightening thing for people who I don't know, who are intimidated by working out, people who are intimidated by the gym. Maybe they see, I don't know, movies or magazines of like big buff guys grunting and screaming in the gym, and they think that's the only way they can grow. Like they have to literally go kill themselves to grow. And do I subscribe to that line of thinking? Yes, I do. Do I think you should train to failure? Yes, I do. I think intensity is extremely important, and I think it's important especially for the trained athlete, because at this point our body doesn't want to grow. Once you get all those newbie gains, every pound of muscle you put on, you are going to earn. Literally, because it's going to be hard. And I think intensity is one way to do that. But we're not in the majority. A lot of people just wanted to go to the gym to train, to feel good, to put on a little bit of muscle. They don't care if they put on 1 pound of muscle or 10 pound of muscle. They're just there to kind of like feel good, look better, that type of thing, right? So for those people, to let them know, you don't have to kill yourself. You literally don't have to train till you can't move your arms. You don't have to train squats until you can't walk into the parking lot. Like, you can do this and lower the volume and get the same, or not the same, but get adequate results. Like, you don't have to kill yourself in the gym, but you just have to do something, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the best benefits of kind of increasing the volume and decreasing the intensity a little bit is, especially if you are newer into lifting or trying out some new exercises, like, you're definitely reducing your risk of injury, because, like, that's when you're going to get hurt, is when you're trying to force out that rep that you think you have, but you just don't quite have it. So you're arching your back, you're throwing your legs into a bicep curl, you know, you're just throwing, your just technique is just complete shit. So, like, that's when injuries happen, is when you're trying to, like, force out a rep that you just don't have. So from that standpoint, I think it does make sense, but I'm more in your camp where intensity, especially when it comes to the mindset of like, I'm training for something, just that mental aspect.
For sure.
Like, hey, you need to know to push. You need to know that you can dig deep when you have to.
Yeah, I think, so for me, I just like to work out. I'm not really training for anything, you know, but for someone like Tom who actually does competitions and races, things like that, if you don't push yourself in the gym, how are you going to push yourself in the race? You know what I'm saying? You have to get your mind right. It's not just about training your body. It's about training your mind as well.
Yeah, and honestly, the best example I can give of this is back in high school when we were wrestling. So wrestling, like, it's one of the most intense sports out there. It's only a 6-minute match, but damn, that's a very hard 6 minutes. It's a whole body pretty much sprint at times. So one thing that we would do after our 2-hour practices is our coach would line us up, and we would do sprints after practice. So we're already gassed out. We're all drenched in sweat. Honestly, like everybody in that room looks like they just jumped in the pool. They're like, they're just soaking wet from all the sweat. So we're in that mindset, huffing and puffing. And then our coach is making us out there doing sprints. Are we getting better conditioning from that? Maybe. Probably not as much just because like practice was so hard. But is that sharpening our minds? Hell yes, it is. Because now we're digging deep. Like, now we're forced to perform at a high level while we're already exhausted. So from that mental edge, I think it helps out so much. And when I was wrestling, like, third period, yeah, I'm tired, but the person next to me is tired too. And you know what? He's a lot more tired. He's not used to, like, pushing himself. He's just like, man, just get me off this mat. And I'm just like, perfect. This is my comfort zone. I'm used to being this tired. So I love that from that mental aspect. It gave me a mental edge. Anytime I sat there in that third period, I was like, this is mine. There's no way this guy's going to beat me. Like, if we made it this far, now it's my turn.
Yep. No, that's great. That's such a huge aspect of training people don't talk about. And you can honestly take that thinking and take that mindset to everyday life. So I don't care if you work in a cubicle every day. If you know in your mind you can outwork the guy next to you, that's a great feeling, you know?
Oh, yeah, 100% agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's about all I wanted to talk about with training today. Just want to touch on, like, more is not better. Please don't go to the gym and train 7 days a week. Don't do two-a-days every day thinking that's ideal, because it's not ideal. Don't go online and look up the Mr. Olympia training routine and copy that to the T, thinking you're going to look like Phil Heath or Jay Cutler, because you won't. Don't go follow your favorite athlete's routine thinking you live that lifestyle, because trust me, you don't have access to that recovery equipment. You don't live the lifestyle of somebody who can literally focus on recovery 24/7. It's not a thing. So be smart with your training. And I listen back, you know, just follow the routine I personally think is ideal to put on weight, put on muscle, look good, feel good, and just be smart about it. That's all.
Yeah. I got nothing to add. That sounded perfect. That's complete summary of everything I would have said, too.
Perfect. All right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You'll find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.